political candidates have appealed to voters' fears through negative advertisements throughout the nation's history. But in modern politics, fear ads have become a crucial part of campaigns. They can be made quickly and come from a variety of sources. But as Caitlin Howard reports for Oklahoma Engaged, there's a science to candidates' use of fear as a political tool.
Politicians play a central role in creating anxiety in times of uncertainty, often taking the form of campaign advertisements. One of the most noted examples is the 1964 Daisy ad, which aired on behalf of incumbent Democratic President Lyndon B. Johnson, warning viewers of the possibility of a nuclear war if his Republican opponent Barry Goldwater were to be elected.
3, 2, 1, 0. These are the stakes. To make a world in which all of God's children can live, or to go into the dark. We must either love each other, or we must die.
Vote for President Johnson on November 3rd. The stakes are too high for you to stay home.
The Daisy ad did more than just help Johnson win. It pioneered negative campaign ads that appeal to voters' fears. In the book Anxious Politics, Democratic Citizenship in a Threatening World, authors Shana Kushner-Guderian and Bethany Albertson found fear ads are memorable and effective since they increase the desire for protection and lead people to search for additional threatening information. Even though threatening appeals from candidates are often strategic, they can also be sincere. Some dangers are imminent and need to be addressed so people can take precautions. As the Daisy ad demonstrates, candidates usually focus people's anxiety on issues that Guderian says are electorally beneficial for their party and warn of dangers the country could face if certain policies aren't enacted or certain candidates aren't elected. But just evoking anxiety isn't always enough. Guderian says politicians also need to offer a solution.
And so what politicians want to do is they want to tell you the opponent has either policies that are outside the norm, they are going to endanger you and your family physically, or they're going to endanger your way of life. And so the solution to that is don't vote for that person, vote for me.
Tyler Johnson, a political science professor at the University of Oklahoma, says stylistic choices such as booming voiceovers, grainy photographs, ominous music, and fast-paced transitions maximize the impact of fear ads. On the other hand, positive ads feature bright colors, smiling people, upbeat music, and less contrast in candidates. Johnson uses the recent ads related to the race for Oklahoma's 5th congressional seat between incumbent Democratic U.S. Representative Kendra Horn and Republican State Senator Stephanie Bice as an example.
You know, anytime you see a picture of Kendra Horn in an ad that she is running, like the color just pops on. You know, she's always seemingly wearing like vivid purples and blues and things like that. But, you know, if it is some outside group running an anti-Horn ad and they use a picture of her, it's like the worst picture possible. It's faded. And so like little things like that can put people at unease.
Another common feature of fear ads is vagueness. Johnson says politicians benefit from appealing to broad general fears and alluding to potential solutions rather than offering specifics.
The more you get specific about your solution, the more you open yourself up to critiques of that solution or people sort of picking it apart, and that puts you on the defensive. So yeah, it kind of makes sense either if you're going positive or negative to try to keep things as sweeping as possible.
Even though fear ads are often effective, politicians risk receiving backlash if ads are perceived as being too intense, forceful, or manipulative. Kyle Loveless, a former Oklahoma Republican state senator who has experience in management and advertising, says the public might be off-put by certain ads that paint politicians, especially incumbents, in a light that's not consistent with the public's perception.
I think we're kind of at a tipping point where there is a little bit of resistance to it, I think, of using fear. But by and large, the only way we're going to know is after the election. We'll see, okay, did we scare them so much that they don't go vote? Or did we scare them so much that it mobilizes them to go vote?
For Oklahoma Engaged, I'm Caitlin Howard.
This report is part of Oklahoma Engaged, an election project by NPR member stations in Oklahoma, supported by the Inasmuch Foundation, the Kirkpatrick Foundation, and Oklahoma Humanities.